Hi, everyone, and welcome to 99% Effective. I'm Tisha, along with my co-host, George. Hi, George.
Hey, Tisha. Hey, everyone. How you doing today?
So, George, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was good. It was nice to have some time off, to relax. Of course, everybody's favorite part, eat lots of food, take a nap, eat some more food. It's kind of a wash, rinse, and repeat for a couple days, which I'm perfectly happy with.
Yep, same here. We had a full house. I had my son home from graduate school, my other son from home from the Air Force with their girlfriends. And when they all left, I looked at my husband. I said, I love our kids, but boy, it's nice when they leave and we get our house back.
So yeah.
I know a lot of parents are looking at me like, what? But it was a busy, busy week, but fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not quite there yet since my daughter's only 7, but yeah. We certainly enjoyed lots of family time. So it was good to have that time off for sure.
Mm-hmm. It was. And the food and the desserts and just a lot of games. And so we had a great week.
You know, I know it's been, you know, a little bit of time since we've spoken to everyone. And often on the show, we like to kind of talk about things that are really important to families. And given the wide range of people we support and that really make sure we have that really broad array of topics, Tisha. And, you know, I think today is one of those times where people are going to really find this information informative in a topic that we don't necessarily talk about as much. And I think there's a lot of stigma around it. And so today, we are welcoming our guest, Laura Badeker, who is an LMFT, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Laura owns a private practice in South Windsor and focuses most of her work on treating postpartum and prenatal mood disorders in women and couples. So I would like to welcome Laura to our show.
Hello.
Hi, Laura. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you guys as well.
So Laura, I want to make sure I get this correctly, because I know sometimes the term LMFT is not as common to people. Do you want to give kind of people a little bit of information about kind of what that means and how that's a little bit different from maybe their traditional therapist?
Right. You know, it's always funny because people, until they like know somebody who's credentialed in some sort of way, they're like, I have no idea what this alphabet soup after my therapist's name is. You know, people hear therapist and oftentimes they think social worker, psychologist. Typically, social worker, sure, psychologist, sure, counselor, and then marriage and family therapist. And essentially, what those differences are really just about our theoretical frameworks and where we're operating from. And the basics of marriage and family therapy is really just looking at the family system as a living organism. Everybody, you know, if you were coming to me for depression, I'd be looking at you and the depression in the context of your family, in the context of the relationships that you have around you. And that's marriage and family therapists have that unique perspective, as well as we are therapists. We don't get any training in case management. We don't get any training in other stuff. We get a whole bunch of training in therapy.
Awesome. I noted that you said you specialize in kind of the prenatal mental health and well-being. Can you describe for our listeners kind of what that means?
The word like specialization in our field is a tough one, because I think a lot of us, you know, if we have an area of interest or some sort of thing may have touched us closely, a lot of us, you know, will say that we specialize. But specialization in its purest form is really about training. And so for me, I've received training from Postpartum Support International, and I will talk about them again, only because they are incredibly important in spreading awareness and in gaining access to care for new parents. So PSI, affectionately called PSI, offers intensive training for therapists, midwives, nurses, doctors, OBs, med prescribers, whoever wants it, patient consultants, how to identify and treat perinatal mood disorders. And the perinatal period is from pregnancy to the first year.
Awesome.
The
awesome.
Whole shebamboozle.
So, you know, and I think I'm really glad that you touched on that, because I think, you know, if people are hearing kind of what you focus on, they may think, I don't know if this type of support is for me, or I don't know if I, you know, would necessarily fall into this category. And so hearing that you say, you know, I'm focusing on the individual. And when I talk about the perinatal mental health, I'm really focusing on pregnancy. And I think it's what, through the first year after childbirth, kind of is that perinatal period of time. So it would make me think there's a whole range of reasons that families kind of seek you out. Are there some that are kind of more common than others, or is it really kind of across the board?
It's really across the board. You know, I have a pretty wide referral base from OBs, other therapists that are trained by PSI. We're kind of like a little cohort. It's usually people who are struggling. And by the time, the fantastically obnoxious thing about postpartum mood disorders is that most of us, men and women, we wait until it's really bad. We wait until we're really suffering to go and get help. So most of these people I'm getting and they're going, I need to get in. Like I'm losing my mind.
And I'm glad that you touched on the fact that it's not just women, because I think often when you hear about the perinatal, you're thinking, well, why would a man or why would a father seek out your care? To my knowledge, we still don't give birth. So, you know, it's like, why would men be seeking out that care? Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, how you may help fathers or expected fathers kind of through this process?
Absolutely. And I'm really happy that you highlighted that, because talking about men in the postpartum period is like one of my absolute favorite things to do, because you guys go unnoticed. The statistics right now roughly are 1 in 7 women will experience a postpartum mood disorder or anxiety disorder, and 1 in 10 men. So it's not that much less than women. Men present differently though. And a lot of the times what you'll see is, you know, I'll usually have if I have an individual come in, I'll usually have her partner join her. And I don't get fathers off the bat. It's usually mothers. And then dad will come in, you know, we'll start talking and, well, what was the experience like for you? And he's like, well, I was just trying to be there for her. Yeah, no. What was it like for you? I don't know. I felt alone. Like, I don't know. She was over there breastfeeding the baby and like, I'm like giving her a diaper. It is definitely like prevalent, and therapy is just as effective with men in the postpartum period as it is with women. So I love when I have men coming in that are struggling with postpartum. And they're, like I said, their symptomology is a little different than how women present.
And it sounds like this is, you know, really quite the journey for a family to kind of get to you. You know, you said they typically seek you out when they're in that moment of crisis, that moment of panic. Are there better ways, obviously, that families can identify, hey, I might be struggling with this, or something feels off? You know, are there kind of typical signs that someone should be on the lookout for?
One of the signs that often goes unnoticed, and I'm very open about my own postpartum experience. I didn't come to this specialization because my postpartum experiences were fantastic. I came because they were terrible and I got really good help. But I didn't get really good help until the second time around, because the first time I didn't realize that I was experiencing like the level of anxiety and depression that I was experiencing. So there's two things that often go unnoticed. Anger is one of them. If mom or dad, or even in same-sex couples, it's a similar process. If the non-birthing partner or the partner who has given birth is showing anger when they've never shown that type of anger before, that's a really great indicator that their mood is off. The baby blues only last about 2 weeks. That's where you're looking at that hormonal fluctuation that we all, you know, talk, oh, you know, I'm sitting there crying for no reason, crying at a peanut butter commercial, whatever. But after the 2 week mark, now you're moving into the land of clinical symptoms. The rage is the one thing. Anger is one thing. And the second thing is a lot harder because there's a lot of shame associated with it. There is a phenomenon in postpartum time period, and our incredibly like clinical word for it is called Gary thoughts. Like, but they are essentially, they're intrusive thought. They have usually three thematics. They're usually violent, sexual, and they have to do with you either harming yourself or harming the baby. This is a woman or man who is having an intrusive thought like this is not someone who's going to hurt their baby, most likely, right? And this is why it's important to go to a therapist who's trained in this stuff, because we can tell the difference between someone who would be at risk for acting on thoughts like this and someone who wouldn't. These thoughts are incredibly common. And what they look like is, you know, mom may have a thought, a very vivid picture in her head of something happening to the child, whether or not it's her doing it or whatever, immediately followed by like, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Who thinks like this? who thinks like this? I cannot tell anyone that I've had this thought because they will take my baby. Those scary thoughts, those intrusive thoughts, I would say 9 times out of 10, a mom will not bring them up on their own to me in session. Even when they do come to me, I have to have this conversation like, hey, so there's this phenomenon, like, let's talk about it.
Yeah. And I like what you talked about earlier. And I think those of us who are kind of in these professions where we're working with, you know, whether it be a professional counselor or a psychologist or a therapist in general, using the kind of the catch-all therapist or counselor, you talked about your particular journey to this specialty, right? And how what led you to it was an experience that you had that you said, this wasn't great. It wasn't great the second time, you know? And it's like, I think that's really helpful for people to kind of hear that often those who are having these experiences think that they're alone. And I think that it's really important that we talk about, you know, the stigma around therapy in general, and how it is okay to seek out help. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate is you talking about that and helping other people recognize like, hey, this is a real thing. I'm a person just like you, and I'm just as likely to have these experiences or have these thoughts, you know, and here's how we can help you process through that.
Right. And I mean, and I'm a trained therapist, and I was a trained therapist both times I was postpartum, you know? And so when, if people have any sort of shame or, you know, insecurity about like, I don't understand how I didn't recognize it. It's like, well, you know, it's okay. You don't know what to look for. Like, it's all right.
Yeah. You know, when you think about how you're working with individuals or families, you know, how would you say you typically try to approach it? You know, what is like your guiding philosophy to understand, you know, is this a support or is this the, you know, service that they need at that time?
So there's a couple things that, like, for me personally, that I bring to the therapy room. First and foremost, and, you know, it's taken me my entire career, and it's a continued work in progress, to understand that I can still be my most genuine self and have boundaries. I can take my shoes off in session. I can sit cross-legged. I can be physically comfortable in session and still have boundaries. I can share pieces of myself and still have boundaries. I can be a human being and still have boundaries. It has taken a long time to reframe even my idea of what I thought a therapist should look like and what the therapy room should look like. And so, like, I mean, that's the first thing that I bring is like me, just me, like regular me. I'm cussing, I'm making jokes, I'm just me. Like, I can't not do me. And then secondly, you know, the nitty gritty, like the theoretical frameworks, you know, I usually will do like an assessment. I'll go through and look for all of those, you know, warning signs. I'll assess for suicidal ideation. I will assess for if she's at risk for harming the baby. Most of the time, by the time women get to me, they're past that time period that we see really sensationalized, which is postpartum psychosis, which is less than 1% of the birthing population. And happens, onset is 72 hours after giving birth. So 72 hours within that time frame, if you're not experiencing psychosis, you're probably not gonna, you know, unless you start having a manic episode. That's a different thing.
But like what you said, what we see in the TV shows and movies, that's what we see. So when somebody hears postpartum, they're thinking that psychosis.
And I think that that also contributes to why people don't seek help, because they're comparing like, well, I don't want to kill myself. I don't want to kill my baby. Like, this must not be postpartum depression, you know, but I can't stop thinking about the house burning down or somebody breaking in, and I can't stop staring at the monitor to make sure the baby's still breathing. Those are not like a healthy frame of thought. It's very anxious.
You know, as we talk about this more, you know, I think I like the fact that you said, you know, you bring your genuine self, right? Because therapy has to be a relationship between the therapist and the individual seeking out that care. And just like any other relationship, sometimes it's a great match, sometimes it's an okay match, and then sometimes it is not a good relationship. And I'm curious how you kind of approach that when you've identified, maybe I'm not the best person for you, or even, you know, worst case scenario, someone really does need to seek that extra help. You know, how do you guide them through that process?
So in regard to fit, right, like, are we a good fit? Personally, from my end, I can tell usually in the first session, if this person is going to click with me, I can make myself work with anybody. If I have some really strong, you know, I don't know, like I can't even think of like something that would like put me off to a client. But typically for me, when I can't work with people, it's usually like, oh, that's not my area of expertise, or I'm only working on this right now, or I'm not accepting these types of mood disorders, you know, because they're not my area of expertise. But as far as personality goes, here's therapy for you. You want to feel like you're talking to a friend, but your therapist is not your friend. So, you know, you want it to be easy like that and have that sort of rapport. And I've definitely been in situations on the receiving end of therapy where I'm like, well, this ain't a good fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still stuck it out because I'm like, well, she's really smart. I know she's really smart and I really like what she's saying, but like, I don't really like her. If you don't like your therapist, you're not going to get anything out of it. Like, you're just going to kind of be like anxious and like, oh, going into session.
that's good advice. Just if it's not a good fit, doesn't mean it's failed. Just move on and find someone else.
And an important conversation to have with the therapist that you're seeing at the time, a hard conversation, right? Hey, I don't really like your personality. Obviously, like, don't say that. I do try to open up that realm for conversation with my clients. I will literally first session be like, so the number one indicator of success in therapy is the therapeutic alliance. It's not what model of therapy we practice. It's not how we do our therapy. It's how connected the client feels to the therapist. That is the number one indicator of success in therapy. And so, you know, I try to stress the importance of that for my clients. And I'll say like, you're going to know within like three sessions, whether or not you want to work with me. And if you don't, let's talk about it. My ego is not that big that I can't find you someone who can work with you. And it's true. Like, I don't take it personally. I am not for everyone. It is an important conversation, you know, especially if your therapist is opening that up. I get if your therapist isn't, it's a little harder, but they're opening it up of like, let me know if this ain't working, then.
Yeah.
So I wanted to circle back. You mentioned anxiety a few times. I know on your website, you have a piece about how people can try to tell the difference between the baby blues, which you mentioned, and then perinatal mood or an anxiety disorder. Can you touch base on that a little bit more?
The interesting thing about anxiety and depression is that oftentimes, like, they're best friends. They hang out together. Because if you are anxious for a certain amount of time, you're going to start to feel depressed. Typically, when we have the predominant condition being anxiety, you'll often see depression follow. Anxiety in postpartum looks like imagining scenarios in which harm could come to the baby, harm could come to the family. You know, a lot of women will think about break-ins, fires, car accidents, things like that, start to have aversions to certain things, be fixated on sleep and safe sleep, you know, and then you start moving into the realm of postpartum OCD when now mom's acting on that anxious thought. Postpartum depression looks a lot like, I just want to run away. I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. I can't get out of bed. What's the point? I feel for parents, you know, I've been there. Women are, and men are surprised when they get angry at their infant, when they are frustrated by their infant, when they be, you know, and then they start beating themselves up. And now you've got this like shame snowball of like, oh, well, I was frustrated because the baby wouldn't stop crying. And I had a thought in my head of like, will you ever shut up? And I didn't say it, but I thought it, and I must be a terrible person, you know, and now they're starting to view themselves through this framework of a terrible person. And just because those two things are, you know, any of them, anxiety, depression, OCD, just because they don't show exactly 2 weeks after, they can show up. They can show up 6 months. Men, actually, it's usually around the 6 month mark that they'll start being symptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like 6 months, you're definitely confident in your ability to keep a human alive at that point. So like, you're like, okay, we got this part down. And so mom may have also been in treatment, or mom's symptoms may be getting better, or whatever it might be. And dad finally feels like he can like, and so then his symptoms start showing up.
So where does sleep deprivation come into all of this? Because you hear all the time, oh, I have no patience. It's because I'm not sleeping, because the baby's not sleeping. So how does that fit into all of this?
Oh my goodness. That is, I would say, like a huge trigger for a lot of people. And it was one of my main triggers. And then I was sleep deprived, obviously, you know, but then I started with like postpartum insomnia. So even when I was trying to sleep, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And that was a very special kind of hell. The importance of sleep, like I try to stress to parents as much as we can, 5 hours of uninterrupted sleep is what I'd ideally like you to get within the first month. That's not realistic. Mm-hmm. But if we can get people to help and allow for that to happen, then 100% that will help. It always helps when mom or dad or whoever, whatever parent gets more sleep, it's better. And a lot of the times you'll hear the parent who's staying home on maternity leave or paternity leave, you'll hear that guilt factor of, well, they've got to go to work in the morning. And you've got to take care of your human in the morning all day. Like you share it. It's a season of life. It's not forever. And you're not a stay-at-home parent. You're on maternity or paternity leave, which are very different than being a stay-at-home parent, exactly. Which comes with its own struggles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you were talking about anxiety and how and depression and OCD and postpartum, they're all connected. If a woman has a diagnosis of an anxiety disorder, is it a given that she's going to have postpartum depression?
No, it's a risk factor. So if you have a history of generalized anxiety or major depressive disorder, you're more at risk for experiencing those things in the postpartum period or in during pregnancy. That risk goes up if you're experiencing those things during pregnancy. You're most likely going to experience them postpartum, but just having a history will not like absolutely seal the deal for you. Some people have no history.
Right. So would you suggest if somebody does have a history to be proactive and maybe start talking about this before it's even a factor?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking of a client in particular who, I started seeing this person 2 years before them and their partner were thinking about conceiving. Well, they were thinking about conceiving in 2 years. And this person had a history of generalized anxiety, had it pretty much under wraps, but wanted to make sure that they were prepared and that themselves, like the couple was prepared and that they were putting every support in place that they could so that their postpartum experience wasn't horrible. And quite frankly, that person and that couple were successful. The postpartum symptoms that they experienced were within the range of normal, you know?
I mean, that's great advice, I think, just to have a plan in place.
Yes.
So another question I thought of as we're sitting here talking, and, you know, our focus in with 99% Effective is, you know, the special needs community. So have you ever had families contact you while they're pregnant because they received a diagnosis while with their ultrasound and everything's changing? So do you work with families in that situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A postpartum therapist, trained therapist, we work with people who are planning for the unexpected. We work with people who know that they're not going to give birth to a live baby. And how to prepare for that. When you do have that unexpected, when you're the reality of your pregnancy or birth or the postpartum period does not match what the reality is, when that expectation doesn't match the reality, that is incredibly difficult for people to deal with. And getting news that, you know, your child's not going to be neurotypical or may have physical disabilities, there's a grief process that they've got to go through. And then sometimes there's PTSD symptoms. And, you know, there's birth trauma is also a thing that both birthing and non-birthing partners can experience being traumatized during the actual birth process.
I had an emergency C-section, you know, and here I am 23 years later. I could remember that day to a T, everything about it. And I remember my therapist, there was one of you in my OBGYN office. And no one could see that, but she was like raising her hand. And I remember she said to me, and I've used this over the years, especially after my son was diagnosed with different needs, you know, talk about it. And I remember I would talk about it and still, you know, I still talk about that day. And it was traumatizing.
And it is. And trauma is in the eye of the beholder. So you could have a medically, like read a medical example or note of a birth. Mm-hmm. And it's like this perfect example of, you know, an emergency C-section. It went well. Well, the woman on the table felt objectified and left behind and had no idea what was going on. So no, it was not cool for her, but it goes things stay with you. And it's true, you know, talking about it does help. And it and it helps other women talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I know in the news, you know, over the past 5 to 7 years, there appears to be an increased awareness on the importance of the perinatal well-being. Do you feel that's, you know, for any particular reason that this is happening?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, but what I would like to think is that, for one thing, news, you know, the news and the sort of highlights on these sensational cases of postpartum
media,
psychosis.
Things like that.
Yeah. But then also social media, in actually kind of a positive way, I think, is helping to bring awareness to it, in that you've got a lot of moms groups on Facebook. A lot of OB offices will have a Facebook group for their moms. Manchester Hospital has a Facebook group for their moms, you know, and that's where I get a lot of my referrals.
Right. You know, because they may not be ready at that point to come and talk to somebody in person, but they may be ready to join that kind of an online support system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that helps. That helps to destigmatize it. You know, I mean, I think about sharing my own like intrusive thoughts with my therapist, I like in my head, like I'm taking a leap of faith. I'm like, this is it. She's going to be like, yes, Laura, you are crazy. It is true. Everything you thought was true. And see, like seeing the look on her face was just empathetic and just so nurturing and caring. And I'm like, oh, I'm not disgusting. Like, you don't think I'm a horrible human being? Okay, that's cool. That, just having those things normalized, is just, it's such a weight. It's such a weight lifted.
So kind of pulling, you know, we're right in the middle of the holiday season. And thinking about my niece, who is due for her first child on December 20th, you know, and I'm kind of giving her some advice. And I remember my son was due December 1st. And I was like, okay, I got all my Christmas shopping done and everything. And he came a little early, but, you know, and I've said to my niece, I said, listen, you're having this baby, you know, around that time. You need to start now preparing people that they're not just coming over for the holidays. They're not just going to come knock on the door and things like that. And it's okay to say no and put a sign on the door. You know, we're home, but please don't knock on the door. We're not visiting with anyone today.
Right.
That sort of thing.
But we
so
are trying to, we are accepting food. So leave it on the doorstep.
Yeah, you can leave food. Yes. Leave food. Text it. Text us that you left the food. Do you have any advice for parents that have young children now or are expecting any day? You know, I mean, the holidays are heightened for everybody with a lot of stress and running around. And I'm sure you must see that that stress is even, you know, higher than usual.
Absolutely. I mean, the initial response is boundaries, 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 boundaries. The stressors are definitely there. I mean, the first one in a regular non-COVID year would be like RSV and the flu. And those are not things you want your...
My son had RSV, so I experienced that. I experienced that as well.
My second got RSV after a family Christmas party. Whichever one of you Jake's people gave it to her, I'm out for you. But, you know, one of my family members, she got it after a Christmas party and spent a week in the ICU.
I was with you. Yeah. You know, and what does RSV stand for again? I know it's respiratory virus. I don't remember what the S stands for.
Something.
We'll find it. We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. We'll put some info in there because I never had heard of it until my son had it.
Well, and those boundaries of understanding that, like, people aren't really thinking necessarily of your perspective. They're just so excited that there's a baby. Everybody's like rose-colored glasses. Like, you know, my dad, I was like 3 days postpartum. He's like, isn't this the most wonderful time of your life? And I'm like, Dad, no, it's not. It's terrible. I'm like, don't you remember? And he's like, oh, well, yeah, a little bit. I guess you're right. You know, like, so like people forget that and they forget how anxiety provoking it is. And so for a new parent, it's okay not even to go to holiday parties.
Absolutely.
It's okay to stay home. It's okay to bring the baby and say, nobody is touching the baby.
Exactly.
Leave us alone.
And I mean, obviously it's different now. We have COVID and a lot of different things going on. And so it's a different world. So I think having those boundaries and giving yourself permission to say no, even to your closest family members, is okay.
Right. And the other piece of like family parties that I like, the family stressors that I usually hear is unsolicited parenting advice, feeding advice, any type of advice. And I have a fantastic canned response that I'm going to share with you guys. And I share it with all my clients. I appreciate your concern. I appreciate you thinking of us, but we've got it. That's it. You don't have to, you don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to defend what you're doing. I appreciate your concern. We got it. Thank you, Aunt Mildred. We're good. You know, whatever. Aunt Millie, let's make her a little cooler than Mildred.
Yeah.
So
that's great advice.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I think that's great advice because I think people want to see your newborn and they want to share in that excitement, but they're not necessarily understanding where you are in that process, right? And so the more that we normalize these experiences and talk about them, it becomes a better understanding for those who are around you, those who may be spending time with you for shorter periods of time, and being able to say, to your point, listen, here's the boundary that I need to make sure that I'm okay. Because people don't know what you are experiencing, you know, and they're coming at it from their point of view, which is certainly well-intentioned, but they don't understand the impact that they might be having on, you know, you and your very new family, or if this is your second or third or fourth. Each experience is going to be unique unto itself.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as we kind of wrap up our conversation, you know, what are some kind of parting thoughts that you would like to, you know, provide the listeners? They're really looking to kind of seek out these types of supports. You know, what are kind of the best avenues for them to kind of go about to do that?
So the state of Connecticut, we have the first established state chapter of Postpartum Support International. And the website is psictchapter.com. And anyone can go on that website and there's a list of free support groups. You don't need you don't need insurance. You don't need anything. It's free.
And so they include that in the show notes.
Perfect. So they show, you know, the list of where they are. I believe we have at least one support group in every county at this point. PSI, Postpartum Support International, I believe their website is www.psi.com. They also have a directory where you can go in and look for PSI trained therapists, which in all honesty, you're either going to want, there's to my knowledge, and I am hardly the word in postpartum, like the end all be all, but I have a good idea what I'm talking about. There's a training by a woman, not just any woman. She's fantastic, has fantastic book, Karen Kleiman, which one of her books is a book that I always give for baby shower gifts. It's called Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts. I'm that, like, you know, oh, yay, like baby. But did you, you know, are you taking care of your mental health? Here you go. So Good Moms Have Scary Thoughts. Karen Kleiman has a training. So you want to look for therapists either that have gone through her training or that have been trained by PSI. And PSI has that directory on their international website. They also have what we call a warm line. It's not a hotline, so they don't get back to you immediately, but you can call and talk to somebody. Just talk to somebody. Hey, I've had a really hard day. And if you want, the warm line will connect you to a case coordinator in whatever state you live in. And then the care coordinator will do the same thing. You know, hey, how are you? Talk to me. What's going on? And they'll connect you with a therapist or connect you with a support group or whatever it might be. Those are the in my opinion, the most direct avenues to finding help.
Awesome. Well, Laura, we want to thank you again for joining us today on 99% Effective. I certainly feel like our conversation today really hits home for a lot of families, whether they be new families, those who are expecting, those who are kind of thinking about what this journey may look like for them, you know, and I hope that through our conversation today, you've really been able to kind of open their minds to what the experience could be like, but then understanding that there are certainly supports, whether you're expecting a neurotypical child or a child who is not neurotypical, that there are supports there. These feelings are very natural. They're very normal. Everyone and anyone can go through them. And while, yes, there are typical trajectories, you do have outliers, just like life. You know, it's going to certainly vary. Being open and understanding about what you and your partner or your family is going through is ultimately the most important thing here.
Yes. Yeah.
Laura, thank you so much. Your information was great and really appreciate your time out of your schedule to come join us.
Thank you for having me. I always love talking about postpartum stuff. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Laura.
That was an amazing episode. Loved her energy and all the information that she provided us. But I do want to say this is our podcast, our last one of 2021.
Yes, and yes it is.
This has been a great year. I hope everyone has found our podcast to be informative. We have some great ideas coming up for 2022, so we hope you can continue to listen to us and follow us and, you know, just and share with your friends. And George, I want to say it's been great working with you. I'm looking forward to the next year and have an amazing holiday season.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Tisha. Thank you. And likewise, it's been so much fun. It's been a great year. All of these episodes, our sibling series, you know, we had a lot of fun in the summer, and we will see you all in 2022.
See you next year.
As always, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the Sarah Inc. website. On any Amazon or Alexa-enabled devices, you can ask Alexa to play 99% Effective Sarah Solutions Podcast. And let us know what you want to learn more about. If you have an idea or topic, let us know. We would love to hear from you.